the topic I wanted to address tonight was suggested to me by a friend. It's interbeing and boundaries. And as I understood it, what motivated this question was, is there a tension in Buddhism between these two things? There's this idea of interconnection, interdependence, Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeing in Buddhism. Can we, should we, how do we have boundaries then? If we're, you know, if we are all one, then where do I begin, where do you end, that sort of thing. Actually, there isn't a conflict. And this is fairly easy to see once you have really grasped the underlying teachings. Unfortunately, they're difficult teachings. I want to talk about them and then go on and talk about good Buddhist boundaries. Not like what they should be, but how to approach them, how boundaries fit in with Buddhist practice. So let me just say that in Buddhism, there are three concepts or teachings that have to do with this idea of inner being. And the first, I talk about a lot because I really like it, and that's this web of causation that connects all phenomena so that nothing is separate, including us. So, you know, if you want to get into physics and go back to the Big Bang, a cause had an effect and all that ripples out, and it's rippled out through time. And everything that we experience is interconnected. And it's interconnected with everything that every other being experiences. When I dedicate the merit at the end of each meeting, I talk about the goodness of our practice rippling out to all the people that we have an effect on, the people they have an effect on, until the goodness of our practice benefits all beings throughout time and space. This is inner being, this causal connection between us all. Interdependence is kind of a meatier subject. And in fact, there are a lot of people who say, well, this is the most brilliant, the most important concept in Buddhism. And that's something that Deb Kerr has been talking about lately, dependent arising, often called codependent arising. And it's how consciousness works and leads to clinging. And that clinging leads to suffering. So it's actually a wheel. That's codependent arising. And that teaching is very close to the concept of anatta, or not self. And that teaching is probably best expressed in the teaching of the aggregates. It's really hard to make either of these concepts readily accessible. The aggregates are aspects of the mind that compose our idea of self, to which we are attached. In analyzing the Bhikkhu Sutta, it's subtitled On Identifying with the Aggregates, Bhikkhu Bodhi says, because the aggregates are impermanent and interdependent, we have an impermanent, interdependent self. After all of this, we really can't help asking, and we can't help it because we're attached to the self. What are we if we're not the mental processes that we associate with ourselves, that we are attached to, what are we? Buddha very adroitly avoided ever answering this question. Because it's beside the point, and because any answer at all would be misleading. It would encourage us to have something else to get attached to. The problem is the attachment. Let me just quote Bhikkhu Kantipalo, who said that not understanding dependent arising and also the five aggregates is the root of all sorrows. We need to see into the heart of this for ourselves, not by reading about it or by becoming experts in the scriptures, nor by speculating about our own or others' concepts, but by seeing the way these teachings work in our own lives and investigating it in our own minds and body through the meditation we practice, through calm and insight. So in other words, this isn't a teaching to be understood. It's a teaching to be what is often termed as realized. It's something that we see and come to grasp, to really understand through our own experience, through our direct experience. There is a sutta called the Great Causes Discourse that walks us through the way that you can examine the aggregates and by doing this get unattached to them. Basically, though, since I'm just skipping from one mountaintop to another, very huge subjects, you watch your selfing, this activity of thinking about me. I don't like that, or I want to do that, or I'm not the kind of person who X, Y, or Z. What about me? All of those thoughts are selfing. So watching ourselves do this and seriously questioning what's going on and why. Why am I attached to this? Gradually, our idea of self becomes porous, and we start to be able to see through it. And we get a lot less attached to it. And we stop taking things so darn personally. Eventually, this whole notion of who am I, what do I want, what do I need to cling to, stops being a part of our mental process. And at that point, we're free from both the attachment to the self and the suffering that it causes. So, basically, interbeing, interdependence, interconnection is a very deep teaching that we're all on our way to realizing. We're all working on it. And that's as close as I can come to explaining it, certainly in 10 minutes. We can always study the suttas and see about practicing it, and I'll just repeat that the way to practice with it, bring the skills that we develop in meditation and watch when we're getting all hung up about ourselves and say, what's going on here and why? Why is this so important? And guess what is a really good arena in which to study this? Boundaries. Because this is the way that we engage with other people, the way we relate to them. How do we? watching boundaries can be very helpful for this study. Until we've completed this course of study and, you know, we're enlightened and we no longer suffer, in the meantime, how do we relate to others? Do we have any guidelines? And we basically have one overarching guidelines. I think the last time I talked about it, I said it was kindness. I'm going to cite the sutta called the Parable of the Saw, in which it's expressed as metta, or loving kindness. Buddha wanted to really drive a point home, and this is a sutta that most students find horrifying. He exaggerated it to make the point, which is, we have to feel metta for other people in this practice of getting free from our suffering. And we haven't really absorbed Buddhist teachings if we don't have it, even in this extreme example or hypothetical, which is that you're walking down the road and you're grabbed by bandits who proceed to tie you up and saw off your limbs with a saw. And if in this process you can't feel metta for them, you're not there yet. Try to get that out of your head. I mean, it's the kind of thing that is pretty easy to remember because it's so outrageous. Remember, the guideline is metta, no matter how much other people are driving you crazy. So metta plays out in recognizing our relative significance or insignificance in the world that we live in. When we're not so focused on what we want or don't want and can see the whole picture of this interconnectedness, the universe, how we're part of the Big Bang, when we see it from the perspective of inner being, then metta is not a matter of self-sacrifice, but it's just being our authentic selves as a part of the whole. When we try to remember that, when we bear that in mind, okay, maybe the parable of the saw helps us remember, maybe this idea of being part of the whole helps us remember. But when we can, then the behavior of others becomes less annoying. And that's always a nice thing, right? Because we're just not taking it so personally. Sartre said, hell is other people. Hell is other people. And we need to remember that we are other people to them. No one is perfect, and that includes us. So mindfulness points us to the details of this, not about what's happening, the event, but it's about how we respond that we should be paying attention to. Those details. How are we responding to this event or situation? And how is our idea of self attached to it? In March of last year, this very last March, Rick Hansen gave a talk that was almost exactly the same title. It was either Boundaries and Inner Being or Inner Being and Bad. Anyway, the two words were in it. And he did a wonderful analysis of the interplay between autonomy and intimacy. And as you all went around and talked about your boundaries, over and over, it was this balance of how do I be me in dealing with this Buddha mind being in front of me who is, like me, part of the whole. How can I make this connection and still feel whole and healthy as what I am now, the way I perceive myself now, as me? Rick did a wonderful job of showing how autonomy and intimacy are not opposites at all, but how they support each other, feed each other, that as we feel confident and whole and safe, then we're free to become intimate. And in turn, the joys of connecting with others makes us feel whole and confident and healthy. It gives us a sense that we have a right to be here and to be happy, and that we share that right with all other beings. As we have the confidence to deeply look at our own experience through mindfulness, we recognize how prone we all are to delusion. We all have our own realities, and those realities can be very different from one person to another and from one day to the next. You know, I will wake up on a day when my wife just drives me crazy. Don't tell her this. But I'm just cranky. Her reality is I probably didn't sleep very well. We're all responsible for our own karma. Whatever is arising in our minds and our emotions now is the result of all of our intentional conduct in the past. Here I am. I'm the product of this web of causation, and I'm responsible for it. So this reality testing that Rick Hansen is talking about, checking out, am I deluded? You know, is so-and-so really not being so irritating? I'm just cranky. Doing this reality testing allows us to get a better idea of what our appropriate boundaries are. Do I ask the other person to stop doing what they're doing? Or do I need to go sit and meditate for a little while until I get a better handle of what's going on? The precepts help, too. A couple of people mentioned times when other people are hurting us. And one of the ways they hurt us is they take things we haven't really chosen to give them. Sometimes it's our time, our attention, our caring, or it could be our money. And in the reverse, if we're doing other people harm by taking things they're not ready to give up, for example, control over their own lives, no matter how well-intentioned we are, if we're taking that from them when they're not ready to give it up, we got a boundary problem. And it's time to look at what's going on and why. So, just to recap, establishing and maintaining our boundaries and respecting others is a terrific practice for seeing through this sense of self that we get so attached to. And to have genuine, rewarding connection with other beings. Asking ourselves, whenever we bump up against a boundary, whether it's ours or others, and there's discomfort, what's that about? Where does it come from? Is it real? What am I attached to? What do the precepts have to say about this? So good fences make good neighbors, and the study of boundaries, how we establish and observe them, can help to set us free. Thank you.